As we await results this election day, there's one thing you already know. This political cycle has been different. The two most unpopular presidential candidates in history and a campaign that reflected those differences between the two had racism, sexism, and xenophobia all playing major parts. Huge numbers have already turned out to vote early or by mail, and if estimates can be believed, we may see record numbers by the end of the day. On this Tuesday, as usual, news analyst Neil Conan joins us from his Macnut farm on the Big Island. And Neil, can you believe that we're actually here at Election Day at last?
Good morning, Beth Ann. You know, it's interesting. I went back to look at my notes for the conversations we had a year ago when I was among so many so-called experts who dismissed Donald Trump as a sideshow. Now, win or lose today, he has not only proved me wrong, but he has transformed American politics, transformed the Republican Party, and accelerated changes to transform the American electorate and with it the electoral map.
You know, and throughout the primaries and now in the general election, it seems that every conversation begins with Donald Trump.
Well, Hillary Clinton certainly hopes that holds. She's tried to make this race a referendum on Donald Trump. And for much of the summer, he cooperated by saying, you know, one crazy thing after another, getting into Twitter wars with a Gold Star family or a federal judge. But since his absolute low point, which was the release of that Billy Bush video where he bragged about groping women, well, he finally showed some discipline or had it imposed on him these past few weeks, and the polls tightened.
FBI Director James Comey also seemed to help him cast the race as a referendum on Hillary Clinton when he decided to go public with the discovery of the emails. Another thing about this campaign that's been different, and that last-minute intervention by the FBI that was seen by many as interference.
An impression reinforced this past Sunday when Director Comey issued another letter that basically said, well, you know, never mind, no news here. Millions of people cast their ballots over the days between letter one and letter two, many of whom might have reasonably concluded that there must have been something pretty serious in those emails for the FBI to take that unprecedented step and step in so late. So now, no matter who wins today, there are going to be questions from both sides for Director Comey about the way he handled this and about the flood of leaks from an FBI that suddenly seems highly partisan.
Can we go back for a minute to something you just mentioned there, that the millions who voted early? You know, I was stunned to see a statistic earlier this morning. You know, back in 2000, just 16 years ago, the total number of votes cast in the state of Florida was 5.8 million. This year, 6.4 million voted early in Florida. Now, I mean, Florida has more people than it did 16 years ago, but wow.
Yeah. You know, the number most people remember from 2000 in Florida is 537. That's the difference that gave George W. Bush the presidency over Al Gore. And Florida may turn out to be just as pivotal this year. But let's get back to that later. The early vote, which will turn out to be the majority of votes in Florida and Nevada, all the votes in mail-in states like Washington and Oregon, above a third, maybe 40% nationwide. This has changed the way campaigns advertise, the way they travel, the way they organize. And let's point out another difference this year. One campaign is the most technically sophisticated we have ever seen. They use data to identify every single possible supporter in swing states, then send out legions of volunteers and staffers to talk to those people in person or on the phone and get them out to vote. In Barack Obama's campaigns, this ground game was credited with one or two extra points. This year, Donald Trump has completely disdained this approach. He said it was overrated. That goes back to his race in the primaries. Now, he won those with big rallies. He won by dominating the news cycle on TV and with social media. So we'll see today, you know, which of these two campaigns outperforms their polls.
If we go to the early voting numbers, it looks like Hillary Clinton and the Democrats may have already done that in Nevada. I mean, polls are showing the presidential race close, but most of the votes there have already been cast. And an analysis of who's voted says the number of registered Democrats over the number of registered Republicans, that shows that Clinton is well ahead.
Yeah, and John Ralston, who's the most respected analyst in Nevada, went so far as to declare Donald Trump is already dead and buried there, in no small part due to the huge turnout of Hispanics this year. This goes to the theory that this election was decided on the first day when Donald Trump rode the escalator down in Trump Tower and talked about Mexican immigrants as rapists and drug dealers and talked about the wall he would make Mexico pay for. Those are comments that Mexican Americans may make Donald Trump pay for in Nevada and Colorado today. Puerto Ricans and Dominicans and Venezuelans and Haitians and even Cubans may make him pay with their votes in Florida. This is one of those areas where Donald Trump has accelerated trends already underway. He energized Hispanics as no one ever has before. For the first time in history, their turnout will reflect their numbers, and they could very well make the difference, not just this year, but even more later, as the fastest growing element of the American population.
At the same time, Trump's chances really rely on historic turnouts of less well-educated whites, which represents a dwindling percentage of the population now, as you've just been talking about.
Yeah, less well-educated men in particular. 4 years ago, everybody remembers the famous autopsy the Republican National Committee produced after Mitt Romney's loss, which concluded that Republicans had to find a way to appeal to women, to African Americans, to young people, and to Hispanics if they ever wanted to win the White House. Now, that analysis looks more accurate than ever before after a campaign where Donald Trump alienated every single one of those groups, you know, and maybe for generations to come.
I want you to hang on there for a second because, you know, Hillary Clinton has had some major problems appealing to younger voters, too. I mean, remember how many supported Bernie Sanders in the primary, certainly in Hawaii, and they don't seem to support Hillary in anything close to the percentages of other supporters.
That's true enough, but they're not supporting Donald Trump or the Republicans either. Some are staying home. Some are voting third party for Libertarian Gary Johnson or for Jill Stein of the Green Party.
Neither of those two, though, look to set to break through and establish a viable third party as a force in American politics, despite all the stuff that we've seen.
Absolutely. No, Libertarian support got close to double digits during the summer. That's now collapsed. They may not make the 5% threshold where the party receives federal recognition. Dr. Stein and the Greens never got above 2% or so. They both have to be very disappointed. Kevin McMullen, who's running as a conservative Mormon alternative to Donald Trump, he searched in Utah for a little while. Now that looks pretty safe for Donald Trump. He might pull away some votes in Arizona, McMullen might, which is one of the factors that makes Arizona pretty interesting this year.
A little earlier, we talked about perhaps, you know, transforming the electoral map once safe Republican states like Arizona, what you were just talking about. And maybe even Georgia could be in play, along with the once reliable Democratic states in the Midwest. What gives with this?
Well, you know, that coalition of college-educated whites, African-Americans, and Hispanics turning some red states purple or even blue. Barack Obama won Virginia twice. It looks like Hillary Clinton will win it today. On the other hand, older, whiter Iowa, Obama won that twice, and it looks set to go into the Trump column today.
Okay, so here's the hot seat question. What do you think happens today?
Well, I think we're going to find out early. North Carolina is raising toss-up. Clinton has a slight edge in Florida. Now, there's no plausible way for Trump to win without both of those states. Same goes for Ohio, a bit less so for New Hampshire. Both of those are close, too. Both campaigns invested heavily in Pennsylvania. Now, if Trump loses one or two or three, even four of those, he's going to start having to bank on really long shots like Michigan, Minnesota, or Wisconsin. Both campaigns spent a lot of late time in Michigan. Excuse me. The last batch of opinion polls gave Clinton a lead of 3 to 4 points. I think the Democratic advantage in the ground game gives her one or two more in the swing states. I think she's going to hold all of that blue wall in the upper Midwest. I think she wins Florida and New Hampshire, probably North Carolina, maybe even Ohio. So I don't think this is going to be close in the Electoral College. You need 270 win. I think Clinton gets 320, maybe more.
We got to go here in just a minute, but I got to ask you about the Senate. Democrats need to pick four seats to win control. If Vice President Kaine can break the 50-50 tie, 5 to win control outright.
Well, I think they get it. They're going to hold on to Harry Reid's seat in Nevada, so no Democratic losses. Easy pickup in Illinois, probables in Wisconsin, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania. That's their four right there. Plus, they got a shot in North Carolina, maybe even a shot in Missouri.
Okay, yes or no? What about Marco Rubio holding on to his seat?
Looks like he does. Some anti-Trump Hispanics may split their ballots and vote for Rubio over Democrat Patrick Murphy. So remember those 17 presidential candidates in the Republican Party. Marco Rubio is the only one who may get to raise his hand in victory tonight on Election Day.
And really quickly, what about the House?
Always a long shot for the Democrats. They had to win 30 to flip it. I think the break-even point is probably about 13. But even at that, it's going to make Paul Ryan's life miserable as Speaker of the House of Representatives.
All right. We're going to talk with you again tomorrow along with your buddy Ken Rudin, who we're going to have back, too.
Good. I'll talk to you tomorrow, Beth Ann.
All right. And just one thing before you go. Did you vote?
I've always liked that, you know, ritual of going down to vote on election day. So as soon as we hang up, I'm headed down to the Kohala High School cafeteria.
Yeah, me too. I like that ritual. Talk to you tomorrow.
I'll talk to you tomorrow, Beth.
News analyst Neil Conan joins us most Tuesdays from the farm. You can hear his Pacific News Minutes right here on Hawaii Public Radio.